an American, a Canadian, and a Brit walk into a bar. But this isn't a bad joke. This is Ladies of Valhalla.
Hey there everyone, and welcome to Ladies of Valhalla. My name is Sarah and I'll be your host today. I'd like to welcome you all to this latest member of the Talking Comics podcast family. This month we'll be taking a dive into the character of Ms. Marvel, chiefly in her current iteration, Kamala Khan. But first off, please allow me to introduce my wonderful co-hosts. In alphabetical order, we have the Sybil of Science, the Pomona of Pokemon Go, the Kebuchet of Cosplay, Ms. Bronwyn Kelly-Say.
Yay! Thanks, Sarah. Oh my god, I love those intros.
And sitting to the other metaphorical side of me is the Octavia of Overwatch, the Hera of Halloween, the Hippolyta of the Horde. It's Miss Jessica Schaefer.
What was the last one? The Hippolyta of the Horde?
Seriously, that's gotta be your new handle.
That's like my new handle. Like that's amazing.
I literally take notes all through the month.
Is that
freaking right? That's amazing.
For the last few weeks.
What have you been talking about?
Oh, you're my favorite. So good.
So anyway, how are we today, apart from being amused at me?
I don't know. Amused at you is just taking up so much of my life at the moment.
Very time consuming. Just being amused with Sarah.
I mean, it really is a huge component. I mean, it's a great component.
That's fine. As long as I'm keeping you amused, that can only be a positive thing.
It really is. I mean, it adds so much to my life.
If anybody else said that to me, I'd be like, sarcasm. But no, you don't.
Full on genuine.
So, we are going to be talking about Ms. Marvel, and we received an email from a friend of the show, Bob Ryer, which I am basically going to steal, because he has managed to email us a potted history of the character, which is so much better than anything I'd written for my introduction. So thank you, Bob. So, Bob says, I was a big fan of the original Carol Danvers version of Ms. Marvel from 1977, as created and crafted by Stan Lee, Roy Thomas, Jerry Conway and Chris Claremont, who was brought into being as a character who could serve as a beckoning point, an inspiration for both female and male readers, young or old, giving them a modern woman as a superheroic ideal, much in the manner of Dr. and Elizabeth Marston's Wonder Woman. Sadly, despite their best efforts, the impact of Ms. Marvel wasn't what they hoped, and although she would carry on for years in various books and other roles, she'd suffered nearly all of the negative tropes that could be visited upon a superheroine. It wasn't until Kelly Sue DeConnick defridged Carol as Captain Marvel that her original mission, both on and off the comic page as inspiration, would be carried out, and so gloriously with Kamala Khan as Ms. Marvel. So basically what Bob's telling us is that this character has been around for absolute years. She was treated really badly. Shock horror comics. And then... Sorry. Couldn't help that one.
Oh, it's okay.
I think it summed it up nicely.
Yeah. I read a chapter of Superwomen, Gender, Power and Representation by Eisner Award winner and friend of Talking Comics, Dr. Carolyn Coker, in which she covers the character of Ms. Marvel and Captain Marvel, and the way that the original Ms. Marvel character was treated was just awful.
Seriously awful.
just absolutely terrible. And it's worrying that some of the things that people sort of wrote, and the fact that she generally was written by an all-male and all-white creative team, she didn't have any female allies around her, and she was basically just there as a love interest, which, you know, isn't great for a character that was supposed to be this inspirational modern woman. So that's why we kind of decided that we would talk about Kamala Khan, because Kamala is much more the modern inspirational character she was kind of supposed to be.
Because she's actually and not just a love interest.
Yes.
She's her own person.
So what we would usually do is kind of talk about the history of the character, what the current series is about. I should point out, at this point, whenever we refer to the current run, we mean the 2014-2015 ongoing Ms. Marvel series, which has a huge creative team, but I'm just going to kind of whistle through it. The writing is from G. Willow Wilson, Sana Amanat is the editor, and then on art and colours and lettering, we have got Adrian Alfona, Ian Herring, VC's Joe Caramanga, Jacob Wyatt, Elmo Bondoc, Takeshi Miyazawa, Irma Nivila, I'm sorry I've ruined that name, Nico Leon, Mirka Andolfo, Francesco Gaston, Marco Feiler, Diego Olategui, and Travis Lanham. As I said, it's a long run, it's a big team, but I thought it was important to get all those names in there. So rather than try and sum up the character myself, I'm going to cheat, and I'm going to read a quote from the Hope Nicholson book, The Spectacular Sisterhood of Superwomen, Awesome Female Characters from Comic Book History. I would highly recommend this book to anyone who doesn't have it. It's absolutely superb, and it basically just goes through tons and tons of female characters from the 1940s on. But the icon of the decade for the 2010s is actually Kamala Khan, and she's described thusly. Kamala Khan is a normal, bubbly teenager obsessed with the Avengers, to the point where she writes fan fiction, nothing smutty, about them having adventures and being friends. Frustrated with her parents' strict rules and feeling outcast at her mostly white school, one day Kamala sneaks out of her house to go to a mixed-gender party. But she finds something even more mysterious than the opposite sex. She somehow gets enveloped in a transformative fog, and after a hallucination of Captain Marvel singing to her in Urdu, she wakes up with superpowers. I'm going to be honest, we've all been there. or maybe nobody else has. So essentially, we've got this new character who was created. She is a Pakistani-American Muslim character. And obviously off the bat, that was highly controversial for some members of the comics fraternity. But there are now 9 trades and a few single issues worth of books. As anyone who's listened to us before knows, I like to give out the Goodreads rating. I'm not going to read through the ratings for every single book because that would just take a really long time. But I averaged it out, and across those 9 trades, the average rating is actually 4.2 out of 5, which is pretty good, 9 trades in. And award-wise, in 2015, Ms. Marvel won the Hugo for the Best Graphic Story, the Joe Shuster Award for Outstanding Artist, and it was nominated for Eisner's for New Series, Best Writer, Best Pencil and Inker, Best Cover Artist, Best Letterer. It got nominated for the Harvey Award for Best New Series and Best New Writer. In 2016, Ms. Marvel won the Angouleme International Comics Festival Award Prize for New Series. That's a mouthful. The Dragon Award for Best Comic Book. And again, it was nominated in the Eisner Awards for the Best Writer and also the Harvey Award Best Writer. So it's a book that a lot of people clearly like. And without being spoilery, would you ladies like to give me your general impressions of Kamala Khan's Ms. Marvel? Do you want to go first, Bronwyn?
Sure. Without being spoilery, my personal notes that I wrote about this are all the feels. Steve laughs when I ugly cry. Kamala is the hero we all need. And thank you, G. Willow Wilson, for demonstrating communication. One of the things that stands out to me in this book, and so beautiful, is that communication is such an important factor in developing relationships and in
as a teenager, it can be something that is very difficult to do because there's a lot of fear associated when you're a teenager, you know, fear of not fitting in, fear of consequences, a lot of unknown, because you really don't know. There's not a lot of baseline for comparison. You haven't been through a lot of things, so you don't know if everything will be ruined forever if you try this new thing. Mm-hmm. And Kamala is very brave, and she surrounds herself with good people, and they are also brave in very different ways, a lot of them in very different ways, and demonstrate a lot of interesting things. But one of the things that I find that is really was really moving and touching for me was that they actually learn from the experiences that they go through in this 9 trade and some issues run. And that actually informs their experience and informs their behavior moving forward, you know? So they learn how to communicate, and they learn that communication is a useful tool, and they actually modify their behavior accordingly. And it's a beautiful thing to see. So I don't know, that it's something that is sort of a personal thing for me, which I'm sure after a few episodes of listening to me ramble about it, you've already figured out. But it's something that I think is beautifully, beautifully demonstrated in Ms. Marvel specifically, and with Kamala Khan specifically, as she learns how to communicate with a lot of different types of people and through a lot of secret keeping. Mm-hmm. She learns sort of the value of communication and the importance of it, and how to do it in very difficult ways. So that has been a big thing for me in this book, and it's been really, really touching. And I'm really invested in this story and in this character because it is so beautifully written. So, yeah, I literally will turn the page and burst into tears. And Steve has really enjoyed watching me read this. Yeah, I burst into tears and he burst out laughing, so. Yeah, I start crying, he starts laughing, I go, shut up, it's beautiful.
It's okay, it's kind of a thing. I cry a lot, too. And Dan will just be like, are you okay? Like, Dan doesn't laugh at me, he just gets confused. Like, what's happening? Like, is something happening? Did something happen? Like, are you crying for a reason? I'm like, it's just really beautiful. Like, it's just really beautiful. Like, you know? When we get a little bit more into spoilery territory, I'll tell you what I was like, just bawling. I'm sitting on the couch like, you know, like that, making that noise, you know.
Yep. Let's just give the warning now. Let's just say there will be spoilers. We have to talk about this. I need to know what's making you cry so much, Jess.
Actually, when her brother's wife has her baby and they're all kind of there and she's talking about it, and she's like, and I'm in love. And I just remember my brother when I was told, and they're all fighting to get in that room, when I was told that my sister-in-law had her baby, and we all ran to that room, and the first time looking at her, and just like, it just brought me, I'm going to cry right now. Like, it made me so, like, you love that child. Like, my little brother, like, produced this life form. Like, it's amazing. And, like, that part, I was, like, sitting on the cry. I'm like, I love this so much.
I know. When my baby sister had a baby, I was like.
Yeah, you're like, you can't. And it's, like, the way she says it, like, she looks at her and she says, like, and I'm in love. Yep. And like, and that's the way it is. And I was instantaneously in love. And if anyone follows me on Instagram or Twitter, you'll know that child is with me like 3 or 4 days a week. Like, you know, so when that moment happened, I was like, that's really how it's like. That's really what it's like.
Yeah.
And there
that moment got me. The other moment that really got me was when Zoe finally tells Nakia how she feels.
Yeah.
And that moment of communication, and when Nakia responds, how beautifully handled that is.
Yes.
And then, you know, when that, I got chills. I got chills. My skin got, honestly, I had goosebumps and I was crying, and just that whole story arc was incredible. There were so many moments in that, like when Zoe goes to school again and she's all, you know, embarrassed, and they all start hugging her, and I'm just, oh my God, I'm going to die. Like, I just.
Or when she tells her mom, like, and her mom is like, I know, I've known forever because I'm your mom. Like, you idiot. Like, I know.
I was just waiting for you to tell me, you know, like, oh my God.
Tell me. Oh God. I'm like, So yeah, there were a couple times where people would be like, are you okay? Like, something happened? Did someone die? Like, now I'm reading comics.
Yes, something happened. I can't really even happening. With this book.
Things happen and I have emotions. So.
And the facial expressions on these. And oh my god, Kamala's brother. I love him.
He just makes me laugh so much because he's just like, it's just such a dork and he just has no concept of how anything works. And then, like, it just works out for him and everything kind of makes sense in his world and he's just adorable.
He's going to be a stay-at-home dad and he's going to be lovely and aww. I just... And, oh my god, I love...
Having, like, a meltdown before, too. Yeah. Like, him, I remember... Like, that's the thing. Like, when you go through these, like I remember my brother sitting there, like, he's like, this is happening. This is really happening. And I'm like, yeah, dude, like, this is really happening. He's like, no, this is happening right now. I'm like, yeah, bro, like, that's happening.
That's a true story.
And my brother is my opposite. He's, like, a quiet, very reserved. Like, he doesn't speak unless, like, it's important. So, like, him even talking to me at that moment, I was like, oh. It was like, you know, him even speaking with
that's yeah.
But how much better yeah, no, the that, entire that world would be if Sheikh Abdullah was everybody's spiritual advisor.
Oh my god.
Like, we need that. Everybody needs that. Like, I don't care what faith you have or if you have any faith, that guy needs to be everybody's spiritual advisor. He's fabulous.
Yes. And the way that he just subverts everything that Kamala expects from him and everything that I as the reader expected from him as well. I think it's everything about this book is a testament to how good G. Willow Wilson is at writing people.
Yes.
Because everyone is so relatable. And there are so many moments in the book that I just think, I've had that moment. I have lived that. I've been there. Or I've seen someone else having that moment. I don't know how she just keeps the quality up. Constantly, there's no point at which I think, oh, this is a bit of a filler issue, I don't like this one, and there's just none of that.
No, the election issue,
oh like, my life,
I oh wow, I
yeah.
Like right all the feels, like right in the heart, like I just seriously, Kamala is the friend, the leader, the inspiration that everybody needs right now. This is the positive spin on the world that we all need, you know, when everything gets too much and we're inundated with so much more news and so much more negativity and so much more information than we're really capable of dealing with on any kind of psychological level. Kamala is the thing that it brings a little bit of perspective to that and a little bit of positivity to that and a little bit ready to deal with that, you know? That I think is what makes her heroic more than her ability to embiggen.
Yeah, it's not her powers that make her a hero, it's her will and her drive, and you know, that's what makes her, she makes herself a hero, not her powers. That's not what makes her
you know, and the fact that she struggles with it, that that's what makes her trustworthy. That's what makes her a good person. That's what, you know, especially going through some of that Civil War stuff, you know, when she's really kind of struggling with what direction she needs to be going in, the fact that she is struggling, she's really thinking about it. She's trying to really apply her morality and trying to define her morality, that, you know, that's what a hero needs to be doing. Yeah. Right. So,
I mean, she's a hero. Like, just think about it. She went against her mentor, her hero, you know, that's her lifetime hero, and she said, you know, no, I think what you're doing is wrong, I can't agree with you, and even almost, you know what I mean, obviously it does not damage Miss you know, Captain Marvel, you know, then you know, they take a little break, she comes back and says, no, I was never really, you know, I was mad, we had an argument, like, that's it. But like, in her eyes, she had killed her relationship with her, she was never going to speak to her again, and she did it all because she was standing up for what she believed in.
Yeah,
that she looked at this and said, no, I can't, I'm sorry, I can't do this with you, like, this is not okay.
We should all be that strong.
Yeah.
And that's not an easy thing to do for anybody, but especially
not at all.
When you're a teenager and
not when you're 16.
With someone that you look up to so much.
And in a position of authority.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the questions that I put down for us to answer was, obviously, because I wrote it very loaded, I put, there are a lot of messages in the books, and do you feel that they fit, or do you find them preachy or heavy-handed? And I put the word messages in little inverted commas. And I think we've kind of touched on that there, that there is a lot within the book to do with politics and morals and treating people the right way. Personally, I it never comes across as being heavy-handed. It never comes across as, you know, you're being beaten with the morality stick. It all just fits with the character of a teenage girl finding her place in the world. Is that how you both see it as well? Or were there ever moments where it kind of felt like it was just sort of being like wedged in a bit?
No, I really don't think so. I think it's put in there in the correct way. I think it's written correctly. You know what I mean? I think that's a big thing. Like, I've read other books where it has felt very preachy. Okay, or it has, and it didn't really fit along with the story. Everything that's taught in this book, and I think there are like teachable lessons in this book. This is the kind of book that if you have a teenage daughter, you should sit down and be like, hey, read this with me. Because there are teachable, you know, moments as we, you know, that's in that book that they don't come off as preachy because they fit exactly with the character and the storyline. They're not like just wedged in there to be there. Now, I do know people that do not like this book at all. I have people that have told me like, ugh, like it was so preachy. It was just too much. But I never felt like when I read it for myself, I'm like, yeah, you're just an idiot. You know, I think some people are scared sometimes when they have to be when they actually are faced with reading stuff of that nature, you know, and I think that's more what it is. My answer is I don't think it's preachy at all. I think it fits right in with her character and right in with the whole story.
Yeah, I concur. I did not find it preachy at all. I found it very natural and very flowing. I thought it was a perfect job of juggling the entertainment value and communicative and educative I'm not even sure how to kind of put that point across. I don't know. I thought it was a very nice balance. I think it's a story that they're trying to tell. And when Kamala is trying to learn these things, we learn them with her. And instead of somebody trying to teach them to us, you know?
Yes.
And I think when a book is trying to teach an audience, that's when it can come across as preachy. But when a book is trying to tell a story of something to learn something, that's, when you can learn it too. And so instead of it being instructive, it's more cooperative. So the audience can come along on the process instead of being beaten with the stick.
There's reason behind it. There's reason behind everything she puts in there. It's not like, you know, I said it's this way because it's this way. This should be because of this, and it goes deeper, and it explains the whole thought process behind it, I guess you could say, right?
Yeah.
That's what makes it like not just like preaching and no, more it's
fully
learning.
Natural part of the story. Yeah. And I think if you're reading like every story is trying to communicate something to you, right? Like that's the whole point of storytelling. So if it's not trying to tell you something, if the story isn't trying to tell you something, then what the hell are you reading it for? Like, that's an honest question for me. Like, if it isn't trying to teach you something, if it isn't trying to give you something, then what's the point of it? Mm. You know, I mean, it doesn't have to be political. It doesn't have to be, you know, this big erudite thing. It can just be entertainment. Absolutely. Like, there's no requirement for it to be a big, deep thing. But it needs to be telling you something. Like that's the point of storytelling, right?
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that the balance of the storytelling in Ms. Marvel is perfect because it does balance entertainment with the sort of more political and sort of social commentary. But it melds the two together beautifully, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking about balance and the flow of the story and how you kind of learn along with Kamala, the Civil War issues that obviously form part of the story, did you find that they kind of made the best of a bad situation in that there had to be issues that tied in with the overall Civil War II event thing? Or did you just kind of read them as like a sort of a business as usual kind of set of issues?
For me, I was the rest of the Civil War stuff. I was just reading Ms. Marvel.
Yeah.
And so for me, it was sort of a best of the bad situation. I don't know. I guess it could kind of go either way on that one. But I thought And when I say best of a bad situation, I lean more towards best than bad situation, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think it was really well handled. It was, I got a lot of background about Civil War because Steve was reading it. So I knew what was going on. Oh, that might have been a little bit contextually missing then. So I knew that it was going to be tough, kind of, you know, and it was tough. Like I don't like confrontation, you know, I'm good with it sometimes, you know, like I stand up for myself very much, but I would prefer to avoid it. So it was tough to watch Kamala have to kind of come to odds with Captain Marvel and things like that. But I really did think it was very well handled. And I thought it was a great opportunity for some learning, you know, for her to grow as a person and as a character and as a hero, you know. So I thought, you know, given that opportunity, they really rose to the occasion. So I enjoyed that.
What about you, Jess? How did you
come? Yeah, so I had some background on the Civil War stuff because I didn't really read a lot of it, but working in a comic book store, I couldn't escape it. It didn't matter. People talked about it. We talked about it. I had to know about it. So I had a good basic background, and I think they handled it. I thought that she handled having to use that content great. Like I said before, we talked about that one confrontation between her, you know, really having to decide what she thought was right. And I think that was a great, you know, that was a great issue. So, you know, I really, like you said, best, I guess it's more towards the best of a situation that she had to deal with, you know. You know, they had to use it. It was going on. That's what was happening in the comic. That was happening in the universe at that point in time. And I think she handled it really well and put and made it their own, you know, made it its own conflict within Ms. Marvel. So I think that was great. You know, if you can take that and use it as, again, something that you can show a little bit of a definition within Kamala's character by, you know, by doing that, that's fantastic. And I really love that one issue where she has to make the decision of what she feels is right or standing up to her mentor and going with that flow and, you know, watching her, you know, make her own choices. So, yeah, no, I thought they were okay. It's not like, you know, they had to do what they had to do.
Plus, yeah. It gave us the best named villain ever, Basic Becky.
Becky.
I know that's not technically her villain name, but
it's Basic Becky.
She's Basic Becky.
That's what we're calling her, Basic Becky.
Yeah. Exactly.
With her freckles.
I kind of liked the freckles. I liked her character.
I liked her freckles too and her shaved head. And yeah. I had that for a while too, though, so I'm a little partial to half shaved heads. Had a few years.
She pulled it off.
She did. She totally pulled it off.
It's just a shame about her actual personality, you know.
Yeah,
that
little monster.
Yeah, she was a monster. She's awfully cute, but she was total monster.
Horrific.
But I think that's what made it good, though, is that she was like that super do-gooder, you know, like we're gonna do the right thing, and like and to the point of like, and that's that line. Yeah, that line that she didn't understand that she was crossing, you know, where you go from being a do-gooder to just a crazy, you know, basic Becky.
I think that's one thing about the Kamala Khan books is that you have characters like Basic Becky. I've actually written them down as Basic Becky and the Junior Fascists. And you get these really serious storylines and these very political storylines, but there's a lot of humour in there. And I find for me that makes it a lot easier to read. It doesn't make it too serious. You know, I'm reading superhero comic books because the real world's not such a great place and I want something to distract me from it. So I personally find that the humour with things like that and the Birdman, who is just genius. He's a clone of Edison that was mistakenly spliced with a cockatiel, like you do. I mean, again, oopsie. Who hasn't done that?
Have to be careful with cross-contamination at the cellular level. Like,
there speaks our scientist. But, I mean, for me, that humour, it just has a really good effect on the book. And I'm kind of getting from what you're both saying that you find that too. And one thing that for me gives me a lot of humour, and this may be just because I'm English and the majority what? Of my knowledge of New Jersey comes from The Sopranos and Hamilton.
I'm dying. Sorry. because as a person that, you know, I'm the tri-state area, I've been to New Jersey many times. I live, you know, an hour and a half away. Like, to hear you say that just, like, killed me. I'm sorry.
And I'm really sorry, Joey, because I know that that will upset you to hear me say that. But, yeah, that's it. Sopranos, Hamilton, done. Anyway, there's a quote in the book which Kamala says. She turns around and she says, "This is Jersey City. We talk loud, we walk fast, and we don't take any disrespect." Do you think the book would have the same impact if it wasn't set in New Jersey, if it was just another New York Avengers-style superhero? Does Jersey have kind of more of an effect on it, or is that just me looking at it from an outsider's perspective?
Do you want to go your way?
No, go on, Jess. You go.
Okay. All right. As I have
called you before.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Let me break out my accent, okay? And we'll put this, you know. Let me get all like Brooklyn, Long Island on you here, you know. Okay. So.
Yes, please.
So here's the thing. Like, living in the area, Jersey is its own interesting place. And, like, I have to say, like, the little tri-state area that we have here is, like, a weird bubble happening. And it is. It's loud. It's fast-paced. It's, you know, it's obnoxious sometimes. It's a little... And it's very diverse as well. So if not impact, per se, or if the book would be, you know, if it was, say, in the middle of, you know, the Midwest, I don't know if it would have the same, you know, effect, if it would be the same thing. That's kind of a lot of the stuff, you know, they're in like kind of an urban city area. I think it would be a different book. I don't know if the effect would be different, but I don't think it would be the same book. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
So. Yeah. I mean, I'm
Jersey at the end there.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Forget about it.
You know that when you drove into Brooklyn, there was a sign that I don't know if it's still up, but it would say, "Welcome to Brooklyn. Forget about it."
Yep.
It was an actual, set it on the sign like you were driving in, and you'd be like, "Yep, yep, welcome to New York."
Oh, I love it so much. The Northeast.
So
that was my dad's favorite thing about Steve, was his "forget about it." I mean, obviously he loves Steve, but
but mostly it was the accent.
Yeah, well, Steve doesn't have much of an accent for the most part, but every now and then you hear it, and oh god, Dad would ask him to say "forget about it." No, say it again. You know. I mean, I agree with Jess. I love the Jersey City aspect that underlies the whole story. I think Jersey City is actually a character in the story as much as Kamala herself. You know, I think that would be a very different book if it were anywhere else. I think it would still be an excellent book. I think it needs to be an urban book. You could set it in Toronto. You could set it in London. But it would be a very different book, because the element of Jersey City is actually a character. Like, it's a living thing in this story.
Yeah.
So if it wasn't Jersey City and it was somewhere else, that character would be very different. I don't know if it would be as alive. You know, like the fact that it's Jersey City and not New York is a big factor in this story. So Jersey's like the younger brother, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I'm here too, and I'm tough, and I'm going to bite your ankles. So, you know, don't ignore me.
You can't ignore Jersey. Jersey's always there.
Jersey's there, you know, but like we joke, like people on the island are like, will joke that that's like the armpit of, you know, it's like a joke. Like my cousins, my mom's brother actually lived in Jersey my whole entire life. So we would go almost every weekend into Jersey. And like, we always, to this day, will joke, like, you know, he'll be like, "Yeah, those people from the island." I'll be like, "Yeah, those dirty people from Jersey." We call it Dirty Jersey. Like, it's like, there's like this banter back and forth all the time, and it's all in good fun, you know? But it is like, Jersey's its own place. I told you, it's like a weird little bubble that goes up here near the city. Like, there's something something happening. Not exactly sure what it is. It's weird, but it's cool.
A lot of people in a very small area. That's what's happening.
That's what's happening. That is what's happening. And then we all converge. This is what happens too, is that like people from Connecticut, from Jersey, from the island, from Long Island. If you don't know, Long Island's off the side. like we all converge and we'll meet in the city at points in time. And then it's all sorts of weird. that's when things all go wrong, is just Manhattan. it's a very, things just go wrong, you know.
No, to be fair, I've seen movies, I've read comics, things do go wrong in Manhattan.
Right, movies. And that's why.
Well, we're always dying first. Everybody knows that, okay? But we're dead no matter what happens. Like, there's an earthquake, an alien invasion, something, we're dying. But anyway.
Sorry, but it's true. Oh, that's why you guys got to come north. There's lots of space.
So one of the things that happens to Jersey in the book, obviously, is the amazingly named Chuck Worthy comes in. And I want to punch him. Mm-hmm. I am not that violent a person, but Chuck Worthy just has one of those faces. And obviously they...
Something out of space.
Yeah. It is just his face. Obviously, he takes Kamala and he throws her up on billboards. And he says, Ms. Marvel is an American icon. She belongs to everyone. What do you kind of think about this idea that having this public presence or this online presence makes you a commodity that can be used the way that the Worthy sees it? I mean, obviously, you know, he eventually turns out to be Hydra and there's lots of comedic acronyms, but...
Yeah, I love those. Those are great. I'm like, I get it now. Like, pull it out and you're like, oh, Hydra.
Yeah. I mean, well, Jess, you work in marketing. You deal a lot with these online presence.
Yeah, it's a touchy thing, okay? Because there's always lines that can be crossed, you know? And I think it's hard because even like a celebrity or, you know, once you put yourself out there, it's out there, you know? You can't really take it back, right? Like, once you're famous, you're famous. I mean, you could do things to screw it up and kill your career, but you're kind of there. So it's hard. Like, on a personal level, no, I don't think anybody has that right to do that to anybody without their permission. You know, I don't think putting someone's face on a billboard without their consent is okay. But then there comes a point in time, like, you look at celebrities that, like, don't want to be approached in public, you know, but, like, you know, you kind of made the choice to be a celebrity. Yeah, so there's that line, that like fine line of like where it begins and ends, where you start to need consent and where, like, you know, you are just like an entity at this point because you made that choice. You know, she did make a choice to be a public figure. So, you know, it's a double-edged sword kind of thing. I don't know if there's a right answer to that, you know?
I don't like to ask easy questions.
Yeah.
True.
Fine.
What about you, Roman? How do you see that kind of idea of if you're an icon, you don't belong to yourself?
I see where Jess is coming from. I have a little bit of a different opinion, just a touch though, because I do understand that there is a line and that can get fuzzy. And when you choose to a certain lifestyle, there are consequences to choices that you make. But were these comments about her being an American idol and belonging to everyone? That's deliberately manipulative and the epitome of entitlement. And being in the public eye means a lot of things, but it does not mean that you give up the right to consent. It does not mean that. Mm. So I do believe that it means that, you know, when you are out and you are recognized, that people are probably going to stare and they're going to point and things are like, but you know, you are allowed to have a private life just because you're a public figure. Now, Kamala puts on a mask, you know, and she has her private life and her public life, and they are as separate as she can keep them, which is good. But Ms. Marvel is still part of who she is, and there's it is, I think, like, to me, in my opinion, whether this be right or wrong, sort of full stop, end of story, is not appropriate for somebody to take that image and use it without consent.
Especially that I agree upon. That was one of, you know, I don't think in, forget about comic book land, I don't think it's okay in real life that people do that. Like, I don't think taking anybody's likeness is ever okay. Ever for anybody. Yeah. Even I have an Instagram page for my dogs, and someone was stealing my pictures of my dogs.
Yeah.
Yes. They were stealing pictures of my dogs. You know what I mean? And what I got as a response from them was, well, you put them on the internet. And I was like, yeah, I guess I did, but it's still not, you know, I didn't give you permission to use those, exactly. You know, like, so, you know,
no. So yeah, I think just because we make something public doesn't mean that we automatically expect people to be the worst version of themselves.
Yeah, that's true. And also it's something that comes up a few times through the course of the book is the idea of consent and, you know, who has rights over you as a person, whether it be over your image, the way that Worthy looks at it, or, you know, your actual, like, your personality. And one thing that we need to talk about, and this is associated with consent, is we need to talk about Cameron, because Cameron comes into the book and he looks like this amazing, perfect guy, and then he gets Kamala into his car and he doesn't drive her to school,
and she's the worst.
Oh, seriously, speaking of people I want to punch in the throat. Oh
god.
Sorry. I'm done with Cameron now. He's the worst, that's it. I think it's important the way that G. Willow Wilson ties it into the story, this idea of just because somebody looks to be one way, you know, should you automatically believe that image that they're portraying? And I don't want to say, should you get in a car with strangers? Because obviously, no, you shouldn't get in a car with strangers.
Do not get in cars with strangers. Do not take candy from anyone.
Except for Halloween.
I'm heavy-handed with messages. Yeah. But yeah, I think, you know, it's an important message that is coming through there, in that actually maybe people aren't always what they seem, and perhaps you shouldn't always believe the persona that someone gives across. But maybe we can just leave Cameron with, he's the worst. Do you want to elaborate on that, Jess, or are we just going?
He's just the worst. She got in a car. She said stop. He didn't stop. That's terrible. When we talk about that kind of consent, it is never okay to take somewhere or do something to somebody without their consent. Period. No means no. Okay, and that is the end of the story. That's what makes him the worst. That he could have done anything else, but to me, the fact that he took advantage, and that's really what happened. He took advantage of a young girl. He took advantage of the fact that, let's be honest, you know, and she writes her like that. Like, there's all sorts of stuff going on in a 16-year-old girl's head, and it is a rough time, okay? You have emotions and hormones and all sorts of things happening, and she looked at him like the perfect, that is her, you know, that is everything her parents told her that she wanted in life, too, you know, like, he was a successful, he was from a good family, a family that they liked, a family that was at their house, you know, he was everything. He had nice cars and he was dressed well and he was smart and he had everything.
Every reason to trust him.
Every reason to trust him. And that's the thing. And as a 16-year-old girl, that's like your dream. That's like, oh my God, he just walked into my life and like, look at how amazing he is. And
he plays my video game.
Yeah, he plays my video game. He reads my comic books. We can, you know, that's another thing we have to talk about later. But anyway, sidetrack. You know, and he totally used that knowingly. And I that's the way I feel she writes in the book. He knowingly uses that against her to get her in that car and to get her to persuade her to join his side. And that's what makes him the worst. He's the worst.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. The only thing I have to add to that is superiority complex. Ugh. Which is literally what I wrote beside his name. Superiority complex. Ugh.
That is, yeah, that's good. One thing that I thought was very important about his character is that he comes back later on and he does almost exactly the same thing to her brother that he did to her.
Yeah.
I think that's important. A, because it clearly shows that he is the worst. But also, it's not just teenage girls that are reading this book. And everything in the media tells teenage girls that, you know, they shouldn't wear short skirts and they shouldn't get into cars with boys, even if they know them and stuff like that. And I think it's important to actually say that, do you know what? Like, bad stuff happens to guys too. Just because you trust someone, regardless of your gender, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't automatically mean that someone is trustworthy. And maybe that's just me reading too much into it. But that was kind of how I saw that whole Cameron coming back later and you know, trying to make the Terrigen Mist and failing miserably.
Yeah. And even her brother knows too. Her brother doesn't like him from the start. So that's the thing too. Like, and he's still like, he's a little like, don't do it. But he does. So, you know.
And so we've got Cameron, and Cameron is, you know, the worst. And we have Josh, and Josh kind of turns out to be a bit the worst.
Yeah, the second worst, at least.
I don't think he's as the worst. Is that right?
But why are all these young men so terrible? Why are they just so awful?
I have a thought. I don't know. I felt like it was a symptom of a larger problem, toxic masculinity, and not teaching young boys and men how to process emotions or loss and grief or to develop social networks and, you know, support networks, you know, especially with Josh. He was a huge symptom. Like he was everything was going right in his life. Everything that he'd been taught that he was supposed to have, he had. And then he started to lose it all. You know, he found that his, you know, he lost his girlfriend, and all of a sudden his friends weren't that real, and his girlfriend wasn't there for him anymore, and his life was falling apart, and he couldn't prove that he was smart, and he couldn't prove anything like that, and all of the things that he was supposed to have, he wasn't, and oh my God, white male entitlement right there in a character.
Yeah.
And just typed the word entitlement.
And his, you know, and this is a symptom that we see a lot in the media where, you know, I'm, you know, he's feeling pain and his response is, oh, well, I'm feeling pain, so everyone else should feel pain too.
Yeah, lash out because I do not know how to deal with these emotions because I haven't been taught how to deal with
this. And that's exactly the truth, is I have not been taught how to deal with this. I don't know how to deal with this. This is awful. And he has no perspective. He has no willingness to even try and find perspective because he has no idea how. So there's no concept of the fact that he's being a super entitled, whiny little, I'm not going to swear.
We all know what you were going to say.
Yeah, I think you probably do. Because he has no baseline for comparison. And, you know, he should have the right to grow up and realize he was being a jerk, you know? And he should have been taught better. He should have been taught that everybody goes through this and it's not your right to inflict pain on other people just because you're feeling it. Hmm. You get, you know, what it is your right to do is it is your right to cry and eat ice cream and talk to your friends about how hurt you are.
Even though society tells you that boys don't cry or eat ice cream or talk about their feelings. Because exactly. You know what? You can.
You know, and it is okay to talk to your friends about that sort of stuff. And they're probably feeling it too. Mm. You know? And maybe if boys were taught how to develop those support networks, we wouldn't have so many school shootings. And we wouldn't have somebody who wants to burn the school down. And then we wouldn't have to worry about crazy basic Becky trying to stop it before it happens.
Yeah, or you know? Shootings at a video game. You know, yeah, I mean, look what just happened because he lost. And that, and you know, you're so right with that. Yeah. And so many, I see it. You see it so many times. You know what I mean? And I've seen it like I said, I have a brother and I am very close with most of his very close friends. I am their, you know, their honorary older sister to all of them. And I've always told them I would always be that for them. If you ever need to talk, I'm always here. If you ever need girl advice, I'm always here. If you ever need boy advice, I'm always here. You know, if you need whatever, I will always be there for them. And I've seen a lot of them really personally struggle with, you know, this whole like, and especially like, I want to say like where we live a little bit, like it was always like who's on the football team and who's this and that. And that's a lot of it was centered around going to football games on Friday nights at the school and this and that and the other thing. So, you know, I think you're 100% on that. It's like these kids are told, you know, you have to be tough. You can't cry. You know, boys don't do that. Why not? Yeah. Why not?
You know, I think a little crying is probably a lot healthier than a few bullets.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And keeping it all pent up and exploding at one point in time. And for girls too, not to say that we're not, you know what I mean? Sometimes it's exactly. like, you know, this whole of like being emotional or you know, showing weakness, like nobody exactly. can be weak. Like sometimes you're weak. Sometimes it happens.
Well, and you know what?
We'll feel a little crappy, you know?
Being emotional isn't weak.
Yeah.
It always kills me. It's like, I'm an emotional person and I'm also really smart, and the two are not mutually exclusive. You know, I can still think circles around a lot of people. I can be completely rational and be crying.
Yep.
Yeah.
I can still think critically and have tears on my face. Hmm. I can be completely reasonable and be crying. It's a physiological reaction that I have. I still think fully rationally. Just because my body is reacting to a stimulus doesn't actually make me less rational.
No, I think it makes you more rational.
I think if we kind of move on from sort of Cameron and Josh and maybe talk about Bruno a bit, because he is the opposite. He is not a toxic white male. He talks about his feelings. He expresses himself. Mm-hmm. He is often quite vocal about how he feels, and you know, he takes actions based on his emotions, and that doesn't always work out for him, as we see by the fact that he lets his emotions overcome him when he's trying to help Josh, and he makes a mistake, and he suffers the consequences, and he pays the price. But I think Bruno, from that perspective, is an important character because it shows that there is balance, and I don't know if you two kind of saw that the way I did, but I, you know, I read through this all in one go, and I thought Bruno is that balance. He shows that the book's not saying, oh, men are bad, you know, and kind of shaking a fist. It's saying, well, actually, you know, there's a lot of different people in the world, and
absolutely. Some of them
are better than others.
No, I think Bruno's a wonderful example of what men can be capable of. Like, I think, to be honest, the book is only showing a few examples of the sort of toxic male personality, and more of the male characters are really excellent, like Kamala's brother, Kamala's father, Bruno, and then Sheikh Abdullah. They're very wonderful examples of strong and sensitive and intelligent, very capable men, right? That are not toxic in any way. So yeah, I think Bruno is a wonderful example of balance. I very much agree with you on that.
Yes. Yeah, I do too. I think he's, you know, and Bruno's not perfect though. You know, he makes mistakes.
Absolutely.
You know, obviously in the case of blowing himself up, a big, but he was doing that to stand up. You know, he even going against, you know, what she said, that he felt it wasn't right. Again, we had him standing up for what he believed in. He believed that imprisonment of Josh was not okay. So even if, you know, better judgment would tell you not to blow up the door, he still did it, you know? And I think, you know, that showing that, you know, you don't have to be perfect, but you can still be a good person. Even if you're not perfect, you can make mistakes. You're still a good person, you know?
Yes.
So, and I think that's where his character, you know, shines, is that like Bruno is not perfect. Bruno makes a lot of mistakes. Bruno makes a bunch of mistakes. Bruno kind of does some stuff that maybe you're like, oh, Bruno, no, buddy, don't do that. But he's still, you know, in essence, he's still being a good person. So I find that very interesting about his character.
Yeah. One thing I noticed is that at the start of the book, when you get the first few episodes, the supporting cast is quite male oriented. So you've got Kamala's family, obviously there's two males there, you've got the Sheikh, you've got Bruno, but then as the story develops, you kind of get more and more female characters coming in. So you get more of Nakia, you get more of Zoe, you get Mike, who, hands up, I adore Mike. Is amazing.
Oh, she's so great.
how did you kind of see any sort of changes in the story or your enjoyment of it, or the character of Kamala, as these more female characters were kind of brought into it? Or is that just me?
No, I think, for me, I felt like Kamala had a little bit more of a support network as the story sort of went along, although she struggled a little bit with kind of finding herself in that, you know, and in sort of believing that it was there and it was okay for her to use it. The support network kind of developed around her before she could really access it fully.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a really neat kind of aspect of the story to watch develop, because it was a bit of a slow burn, because Kamala was learning sort of to access her ability to read out, as well as developing the people she could reach out to.
Hmm. Yeah,
and not to say that she couldn't reach out to the men in her life. She absolutely can and does. But her whole life before this had all just been about Bruno, in terms of her friend and support group. And then so to find that she actually can turn around and look around and see that she has all of these female friends. And you know, Bruno has been a wonderful, perfect best friend for a long time, but that relationship has been changing as, you know, things happen when you're 16. And having a male best friend can sometimes become complicated at 16.
Yes.
As we know.
It proves.
And Bruno does show.
Yes, exactly. So having a good kind of network of female friends, especially the strong sort of wonderful female friends that Kamala has, as we know, is an incredible support network. You know, like that's something you don't throw away lightly. That's an important thing to have in your life, and that's something you keep forever. So yeah, it's a really lovely thing to watch.
Yeah, no, I think they did a great job too with Zoe's like transformation, I guess you could say. Yes. Her yes. evolution. How about that? That's a little better. It's really her evolution of accepting who she is. And like, you know, and that happens. People change. People think about things and they change their lives. Things affect them differently and it changes them. So I thought that was a really awesome thing to watch was her evolution and how she turns into the woman that she becomes, you know. Also, her kind of back and forth with Nakia, you know, and that happens too, you know, it happens with friends. Sometimes, you know, it's interesting to watch Kamala's thought process of her friends and accepting that these were, you know, that these are women that she can rely on, that these are people that she can go to. Her having to accept Mike, you know, because mm-hmm. Mike's with Bruno, even though she can't be with Bruno, you know, she still does obviously have those feelings for Bruno. And when Mike first steps in and, you know, she sees him kissing in the hallway, it was, you know, she avoids her, she doesn't talk to her. And I think, you know, and I think that's a normal reaction. I don't think mm-hmm. that's, you know, anything abnormal. And watching her evolve and learn that Mike is a good person and Mike will help her and Mike will be there for you. And I know, you know, and it all leads up to that lovely, what you're calling the lovely slumber party that they have with her, you know.
I love that so much.
Yeah, I know that's one of your questions, Sarah. Is that slumber party? I just wrote next to that one, all the feels.
Hello, friends.
I wrote
all
bold.
The feels. Yeah, all the feels. You know, but and it does. And it comes to that like kind of moment when they're at that slumber party and she says, you know, enough. I need to tell them this. They need to know. I need to, you know, and that she can fully, you know, trust them and they support her. Where when they
and they're like, we know.
Yeah. Like everybody's always so like, good. You're really bad, you know, and it is funny because like it is. It's like you're wearing like a piece of fabric over your eyeballs. Like,
yeah. And we know. And can I just say that I love that everybody already knows? And that, you know, it's like, dude, the fabric doesn't cover much. We can tell. Like.
And the only person who didn't really get it was Josh.
Yeah.
He's the only person who's like, oh, it's Kamala under there.
I love it so much.
I know that the Green Lantern movie with Ryan Reynolds, everybody hates it, but still the funniest part of that movie is when he takes the mask off and his girlfriend's like, really? You really thought that I couldn't tell it was you? You just had a bit of material over your face. I know it's you. You're an idiot. And that's what that moment makes me think of when they just give her that big hug. And they're like, we know. No. We've just been waiting for you to tell us. As if they wouldn't have known when they just spent like a month covering for her when she ran away. But she's
they all dress up as her. I love that they all have their own like colors too. It's like their own version of her like costume. Like they're all wearing like whatever. Like, you know, what does she say? Like the fashion bloggers are finally not like.
Yeah.
I love Zoe's costume especially.
Yeah. Mike color coordinates her headband over a wig.
Yes.
Because Ms. Marvel can't have like green hair.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. Cosplay goals.
So good.
It's another thing as well that another thing that I've kind of commented on in the questions and that comes out with her friends is her geekiness. She plays World of Battlecraft and Ancient Scrolls Online, and she writes fan fiction. And I know it's kind of G. Willow Wilson sort of poking fun at herself because she does play World of Warcraft and she does play Elder Scrolls Online. And like many of us, she also spends her time on social media going, I wish I had more time to do all of these things. Mm-hmm. Do you find that Kamala's geekiness makes her more of an insider or an outsider in her world? Does that kind of, because obviously there is this much maligned idea of the geek being the weirdo that doesn't have any friends and is an outsider, but do you kind of find that's how Kamala comes across, Bronwyn?
I thought this was a really interesting question.
Really?
Yeah, I really did. This one actually kind of, it stumped me at first. Because for me, a huge part of the overarching story thematically has been that Kamala spent a lot of her time juggling different worlds. So asking if she was an insider or outsider in the world she inhabits, I was like, well, which one?
Yeah.
So like for me, like she had her online world and her kind of spiritual world and her familial world and her secular world and her superhero world and the whole sort of arc and like all of the story arcs. So we're talking from issue one all the way to where we are now. There's been kind of an underlying thematic arc where she's been kind of trying to bridge the gaps between these worlds and trying to figure out where she fits in all of them, you know? Mm. And so I think the answer is a little bit different for all of them to some degree or another. Like, I think her geekiness overall, on average, makes her more of an insider than an outsider, but not exclusively. So, like, in her online world with her gaming friends and things like that, obviously her geeking out fits her right in. Her spiritual world, though, and her familial world, the geek part of her doesn't really have a place there. Her secular world, some of it, like with her school and her school friends and things like that, I'm not 100% sure where that fits exactly. With her superhero world, I think her geeking out fits a little bit better, you know, like she can, you know, chat it up with Iron Man and with, you know, Spider-Man and stuff like that. So I think it really fits sort of more with her secular world and her superhero world. At least it doesn't make her an outsider, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
Well, maybe I spent too much time breaking this down to its component parts.
Well, no, to be fair, when I wrote the question, I deliberately put worlds plural because like any of us, like anyone in the real world, you don't just have one little box that you fit in. She has all of these different things that she does, you know, and I know that I'm a different person at work to when I'm at home, to when I'm with my family, to when I'm online, to when I'm talking to you ladies. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to acknowledge the fact that she does have all of these different people that she has to be for everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
But now I need to know, Jess, are you a different person in World of Battlecraft to who you are in the real world? And see, I know it's not World of Battlecraft.
Yeah, it is. I understand why she had to call it World of Battlecraft. Although Blizzard is normally pretty friendly with that type of stuff, so she may have gotten away with it. But I get World of Battlecraft.
Yeah, with the Dr. X storyline, I can see why they didn't want that.
Well, you know what?
Dr. X is just...
actually pretty, like, even, like, they will always, even like when South Park made fun of them, like they were like, it was an honor. You know what I mean? Like that's always kind of the way Blizzard's been. They're really not bad with fan art. They don't try to stop. The only thing they do try to stop is like people like making objects, you know, illegally out of their likenesses. But other than that type of stuff, they're normally pretty chill with it. So, but I have to say, first off, that this is obviously for me, I talk about this on the other podcast, I play World of Warcraft and have for about 12, 13 years now. So I loved that part of it. And you could tell, for me, I could tell that G. Willow actually played the game. Mm. You know what I mean? There were certain things that she said, like there was just certain parts that I was like, yep, like you played WoW. You definitely played WoW and you played it for a little bit, you know. But this is also somewhere where I like really connected with this story myself personally, because there is this, you know, separation. And am I a little different when I'm in game? Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I am a little different, but it's not that I'm a different person, I think I'm a little bit more comfortable. And the people that I'm playing with in game understand my love for the game. Whereas my family throughout the years, even with podcasting and comic books, do not really understand. You know what I mean? They don't really get it. So it's this, you know, and especially once I go to work, like when my job, like kind of found out that I did a podcast, they were like, oh, what's a podcast? And why would you talk about comic books? You know, like people don't like that's, and that's kind of the way it is though. You know what I mean? Like there are a lot of older people there. So yeah, when I go to work, I put on my marketing face and I put on my professional face. And when I'm with my family, I try to make them understand why I don't want to go outside and why I want to sit in front of a computer for hours, you know? And then when I'm in game, I am Jara, the Retribution Paladin, coming to kick your face in, you know?
Like, yep.
And I'm going to top the DPS charts and I am going to play as hard as I can. I'm going to compete with everybody. And even like me and Dan, like we're very, like me and my husband are competitive when we play this. We're in real life, but when we sit down, like game is on, you know? Like it's on. And we're like, you know, we're like two different people. We turn into like, you know, either work as a team or we're fighting at each other's throats. So, you know, so yeah, there, I really did connect with that, and that, you know, that her geekiness kind of in all different areas of her life affected it in different ways. And that's kind of just the way it works. Like there, you know, you're going to have to sometimes wear a bunch of different hats, you know, that's what it is. But yeah, I loved some of that stuff. I really did. I'm not gonna lie. I was like, ah, she definitely plays the game. I've seen her tweet about it though before. Like I know when the cookbook came out, like she like made a big tweet about that and stuff of that nature. So I kind of had that. Yeah.
I thought it made her more relatable for me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that as well is important. We talk a lot about how we talk a lot. We talk a lot about how life when you are a teenage girl is not the easiest thing in the world. And I think it's important that this book presents such a good role model for teenage girls who maybe don't fit into one of those little boxes that Hollywood tells us exist, where you're the jock or the cheerleader or the nerd. And for me, I find the book important because actually, you know, you can be in lots of different boxes, and you can play computer games, but also have friends who are into sports and, you know, hang out with people from different social circles. And I think it's good that they show that in a book that is so popular with teenagers and with female readers.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a recent article that apparently there have been 500,000 copies of the Miss Marvel trade paperbacks sold to date. And obviously, nobody gets to know digital sales figures. Nobody knows those. But physical trade copies, books like Miss Marvel, Moon Girl, Devil Dinosaur, Unstoppable Wasp, it's a known fact they sell big numbers, and they especially sell big numbers at Scholastic book fairs, which, by the way, they should have those for adults because I miss book fairs.
Oh, right? I love the book fair.
Seriously.
You get so excited when it was book fair day, you know, like you had like your dollars and your change and your little purse.
I used to save all my pocket money up.
For the book fair.
It was the best. It was the greatest. And mm-hmm. Now we're adults and we don't get book fairs anymore, and it really does.
How do we make that happen?
Sad.
How do we make this happen?
Seriously. We need to write to some people. There must be some people out there that can deal with this for us. Anyway, putting that aside.
That should be like seriously something we look into, getting like Scholastic Book Fair to come to comic book shops, right?
I wonder.
Yeah.
I wonder if I could do that. I wonder if I can make that happen.
Can they just come to my house and just sell books?
Well, yeah, that would be handy. I think that might be called Amazon.
Yeah, we could just go to bookshops. It's not like we can't walk out of the house here again. We're like, ooh, book fairs. Like,
yeah, but they were so exciting.
They were. Yeah.
Anyway, is there like something to that trend? Because there's so many people online, and I'm not getting into the big debate about what people do or don't say online, or the online shenanigans that have been happening recently, because they talked about that on the main Talking Comics podcast, and I wholeheartedly agree with everything that was said. But lots of people talk about how comic books are failing and comic book shops are failing and books like Miss Marvel don't sell in comic book shops, so they are failing. Do you find that these trade sales and presumably the online sales kind of disprove that argument that nobody's reading these books?
Oh, very much so. I think, honestly, the single issue numbers are kind of a dinosaur at this stage in terms of determining sales figures. Mm. I think the landscape is changing. I think the market is changing. Honestly, I read almost everything digitally at this stage. I don't have the space to collect the kind of volume of things that I read. Mm. You know, I live in a townhouse and it is full. I live with another comic book geek. Like,
yeah, it's hard. It's rough.
I'm sorry. We must read digitally. This is not optional. I read way too fast and way too much. And yes, I read everything multiple times. Don't worry. I assess the art. I love it so much. I know you guys put so much work into it. I know, I horrified Jen St. Ange at Fan Expo when I told her I read really fast. She's like, please don't. I work so hard. I was like, I know, I promise I read it many, many times. I really do.
And she is very good as well. She'll come up later.
Her work is so beautiful. I feel so bad about that. I really do. I really enjoy the art. I promise that I do. I promise. But anyway, sorry, I digress. I really feel like as an industry, we really need to catch up to the fact that people read in different ways now. And we have changed significantly as a market. And it's like television. You can't, you know, like look at Brooklyn Nine-Nine for an example. You know,
I missed that.
Look at Brooklyn Nine-Nine for an example. The numbers on the last episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine that was aired before it was canceled were dismal. It looked as if nobody watches that show. So they canceled it. Mm. And then there was an insane uproar because everybody watches that show on Netflix. Everybody. Because people don't watch network. No, well, and I apologize. We are getting you Netflix. I'm sorry, that's not negotiable.
We just get our Netflix already. Like,
yeah, we're doing that.
We're gonna get you Netflix. Okay, bye. That's it. we're done having this conversation.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm sorry.
On a sidebar, the day after this podcast is released, it's my birthday.
See, Netflix for your birthday.
For your birthday. That's your birthday present.
But and the power of that, you know, now. Another network has picked up Brooklyn Nine-Nine. So apparently I'm going to actually have to watch network television because I love Brooklyn Nine-Nine and I don't want it to get canceled again. But that's the thing is people don't watch a lot of network television. Not everybody, you know, like sure, there are lots of people out there who still watch network television, sure. But there's a huge part of the market who don't.
Yeah.
Who don't even have cable TV anymore. You know?
I get rid of my cable and not ever miss it. And right? I really don't want, because I don't watch it. I am part of that, that you know what I mean? I'm part of that. I honestly, I haven't really watched something actual live on TV in God knows how long.
Oh, well, we did just we got up to Killjoys and now we have to watch it like week to week. And oh my God, only for Killjoys would I watch network television. Yeah. Okay, this is saying something about how much I freaking love Killjoys because hot damn, I hate commercials. It is not okay.
Oh, yeah, no. I won't even. No, but that's the thing. I won't even watch them live. Like I'll watch. I'll wait the hour and watch it. The one show I do watch on network television is RuPaul's Drag Race. I'm obsessed with drag queens. I'm sorry. I'm not going to lie to you. I love drag queens. I love that show so much. I love every minute of it. And I will record it and then watch it without commercials. I will skip right through that.
Yeah. And this is it. You know, we watch on demand. Without the commercials, right? So, because we did it once and now we're just like, okay.
No one wants to watch commercials anymore. Okay. That's the bottom, pretty much the bottom line about it. But I do want to like touch a little on something where, you know, they talk about these comic book stores failing and the stuff failing. And I want to say that as someone that has worked in a comic book store, our comic book store does very well. Okay. We are not failing, but we also keep up with modern trends.
Thank you.
Okay. The comic book stores that are failing are the people that are not keeping up with modern trends, that are not getting the correct books, that order two of this book. You know, now I'm not going to lie, Ms. Marvel did not sell as well as, say, Batman, but my boss did not get two copies. He got 15 copies, and we'd have extra in the store. And it's not that you it's a balance of ordering the correct amount, but being able to, if someone comes in, being able to hand them an issue of Ms. Marvel or the trade of Ms. Marvel. We have a wall of trades of every color, shape, size, you know, content, you name it. Okay. Mm. There is a whole back wall of it, and they sell so well.
Yeah.
You know, so it's the stores that are not keeping up, that people like. A lot of people don't like single issues.
No,
they don't. They just don't like them. They don't want to read. My husband will not touch. I have boxes and boxes, and he's like, yeah, just get me the trade. He'll have me buy the trade of something that I have the full run of, because he doesn't feel like it. He's like, I'm not trying to go through all your single issues and pick them out. He's like, please get me the trade.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Yeah. I'm like that. I will only read single issues digitally.
There you go. No, he won't even touch him digitally. He's like, forget that. Not happening. Get me a trade.
No, that's a lie. The only thing I will read in issue form is Matt Kind, because he does interesting things on like the sides of things, you know, like around the margins. And so there's like extra matter, but it's very rare. It's too small of a format for me.
Yeah.
Mm. I people love like trades.
Yeah. No, and it's these stores and these people that are not keeping up with... the world changes. We're changing. We as a people change, you know, what we digest, how we digest things. It's changing. The internet has changed things. Okay. And people need to pay attention. You can't ignore it anymore. You can't ignore that. You can't ignore that things change. I know there are people that will to the day they die, but you know,
I think,
sorry, rant over.
No, that's fine. I found an interesting quote from G. Willow Wilson, and this is actually from back in 2014, so obviously the book's been running for a long time since then, but she actually said, we've sort of disproven a lot of industry math. New characters don't sell, female characters don't sell, minority characters don't sell. When you can sort of break that down and show that these kind of characters can be marketable, that there can be audiences for these kind of stories, then that's a good thing. That holds the door open for hopefully more stories that speak to a broad range of people. And I think that that is linked in with this, and you know, the fact that these books are selling in trade and maybe aren't selling in through traditional markets, because maybe the people that want to read these books aren't going to go into a comic book store, because maybe those stores you're talking about, Jess, the ones that will order 50 copies of Batman and no copies of Ms. Marvel, maybe they're not welcoming the customers in as well.
They're not. And I've been in them. I've been in them. Where we live, again, and we talked about this a little bit before, is there's a lot of people in a little bit of space. Okay. Mm-hmm. Long Island is a weird place. There's a lot of people and it's on a little island. And there is, I mean, I could go to at 8 comic book stores in under 30 minutes. You know what I mean? In within a half an hour drive of me, I think I could hit 8 comic book stores. Okay. Wow. And out of those 8, I'd maybe go to 2. As I have been, and some, like, highly disrespected, like, seriously disrespected, to the point where I have told people, I'm not going to say it on air because I don't believe in that. I'm not going to shame people. That's not what I want. But, like, to the point where I walked into a store and he was like, what could you really be looking for here? And that was said to me by the owner of the store. So
I was literally told that I couldn't buy Preacher because it wasn't for girls.
It wasn't for women. Oh, what are you looking for? You're looking for the, or one guy asked me if I was looking. He's like, what are you, My Little Pony, something like that. And I'm like,
actually, My Little Pony is an amazing book.
Yeah,
by the way.
My Little Pony is amazing. But
the fact that he just assumed that I was there for My Little Pony.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was insulting.
Yeah.
And I will never go back there, you know, and that's the thing. If you make it an uninviting place for women or minorities or anybody, people are not going to go in there and your store is going to fail. You know?
Yeah. When you make it an uninviting place for those people, no, they're not going to come into your store. And then no, you're going to say, well, those people don't read comics, because they don't read comics from your store because you're a jerk to them.
Yeah.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. Yeah, no, or places that are uninviting to kids. There's a lot of stores that are like, don't let your kid touch that. That's one thing. And I mean, maybe it's because the owner of my store that I worked at does have two young children, and they would come in the store, and we called it his one daughter. His name is his daughter. He has a daughter and a son. And we called her Hurricane Elsie. And she would just, you know, go through the store and like touch everything. But we let any kid come in and touch everything. Okay, because you want to know what their kids, and it's a comic book store. That is your future. They're going to pay your bills in the future.
Like, if you don't want children touching it, put it on the top shelf.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Have a kids section too. You know, we have a section that specifically is everything for kids, and they can pick up any book on there. There's no cursing. There's no nothing. So you can send your kid over there and they can read through every book on that wall. And you should look at these poor books. They are like, oh my God. It always looks like who did it and ran in the corner. But like, but kids were so like, you could see their eyes light up. It's their height. It was their, you know, their size. They were able to reach the very top and the very bottom. And we have kids, they would draw us artwork and we put it up in the back. So many stores are so uninviting to kids, and it's so stupid. Okay. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Anyway, but yeah, again, well, I digress.
And but, especially because like, it's not just comic book stores that you can get comics at now, like, especially with the trade paperbacks. You know, you can go into a long form bookstore, like any, you know, Chapters or Indigo or wherever you could buy books, and you can, there's entire sections for trade paperbacks and hardcovers and things like that. You know, if you want to go in and buy Preacher, if you want to go in and buy Batman, if you want to go anything that's a decent size, decent selling series, you can find it. You want to get Saga, you want to get Ms. Marvel, you want to get anything like that, you can get it at freaking Chapters. You don't have to go to a comic book store.
Exactly. So if you're going to make that store uninviting, people are not going to come in there, and that is going to fail, and your numbers are going to be bad. Just, you know, I don't know. Things that we think are common sense. Yeah.
Speaking of kind of making places more welcoming, obviously, I've never been a high school student in America, and I always get very confused as to what age high school is, because your years do not match our years, and it really baffles me. But anyway,
it's pretty much Quasi, like 15 to 18, if you want to go ages.
Okay, like, I think that's like the second half of senior school over here. You kind of have like 13 through 16, and then if you want to stay on and do another 2 years at college, you can, and then you get university after that, so you go to uni like after you're 18, which is why it baffles me a lot when I have to sort of look up what age these kids are supposed to be.
Yeah, no, you can graduate at 17 or 18. That's like when you would graduate high school in America, if that helps.
Okay, we don't really do graduation unless it's university.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're just less caps and gowns. There's no throwing hats in the air. It's all very sad. Anyway, now that I've complained about being a teenager in the UK, Quasi, who is Bruno's friend from Wakanda, he actually comes over to America and looks at the social experiment that is the American high school. And he's hilarious with his armful of orange foods. This is kind of for you, Jess, because you've been to an American high school. The way that he sees this social experiment, is that the way that remember high school? Is that how it is? Do you have all of like the social strata that Quasi is seeing, or is this just made up for comic books?
No, high school in America is a giant social experiment. Okay, it is. You know, I think in part of my notes, I'm like, you know, and we talked about this before, when you throw a bunch of, especially where I live, like I said, it's very diverse here. Like, you know, there was a lot of everybody, there's a lot of different backgrounds where I come from. Not everyone is white, not everyone is black, not everyone is Spanish. We're all just thrown together. And it's like just this big melting pot of hormones and emotions. Okay, that's what like American high school is. It's like this horrible time of of everything. And yeah, you do kind of get that. And like, you know, and when you see it, like there were groups, you know, there's the groups, there were popular kids. I was not one of them. I was not a popular kid. And it is like this weird, I do agree, it is a weird social experiment that like, you know, once you get out into the real world, you're like, oh, this is totally different. Like what's happening, you know? What you call it? I wrote a couple things and I was like, you know, It's interesting because she shows like kind of the way you interact with your peers in high school, and that kind of is the way it is here. You know, you kind of have like these weird social groups, and you have the jocks, and you know that's why you know we say Josh is horrible. But I kind of feel bad for Josh because I kind of, you know, you see like he was, like we said, he was, you know, kind of in that structure. We all have these like, this is what you're supposed to be. And high school here is very much like that. Like, this is what you're supposed to be. I don't know if it's the same way now. Granted, I haven't been in high school in how many years, so we're not going to discuss how long I haven't been in high school for. When I started, you know, like, so, but yeah, you know, American high school is a bit of a poop show. So
there we go.
P-O-O-P.
Don't start that again. We'll be here for days.
Anyway, I digress. Go ahead.
I think the only thing it's lacking as a social experiment is a control group, but that's the scientist in me.
Yeah, I think that's it. But I don't know, that could be there, and you know, we don't know it.
Yeah,
we may not even know.
Maybe it's a double blind.
But yeah, it's been interesting.
I think that we are descending into anarchy now. And I think maybe that might be a good time to start wrapping things up.
He usually is.
Oh, yeah. One thing that I like to do is to put together a list of books of things that if you like Miss Marvel, you might also like. And Bronwyn, you mentioned Speaking to Jen St. Ange earlier, and one of the books that I've actually put on this list is Nancy Drew from Kelly Thompson, Jen St. Ange, Triona Farrell and Ariana Maher. And I think you've read this recently, and Jess, I don't know if you have read this, but Nancy Drew is another book that kind of looks at teenage perspectives and seeing your place in the world and how you fit into those people that you grew up with. And if anybody isn't reading it, then I highly, highly recommend it because it is beautiful and it's such a well-written book. I love it. I grew up reading the Nancy Drew books.
I have them above me right now as we speak.
Aww.
I have a set of them.
Yay. Yeah, no, I love Nancy Drew in every iteration, and this one is fantastic. So,
Yeah, so I think that's one that if people like this, they might like that too. Obviously, on the list, I've got Kelly Sue DeConnick's Captain Marvel.
Yes.
Because Kelly Sue DeConnick's Captain Marvel. I'm pretty sure every single month I recommend people read Unbeatable Squirrel Girl by North and Erica Henderson, and that's because you should all be reading Unbeatable Squirrel Girl. Again, it's funny and it's got that kind of nerdiness. And something that is ongoing at the moment that I have been reading is a crossover featuring Unbeatable Squirrel Girl and Ms. Marvel. It's a four-part miniseries, which is kind of leading up to a new animated TV show, which is called Marvel Rising. I would suggest that you read it, but the naming conventions are ridiculous. So you've got Marvel Rising Alpha, you've got Squirrel Girl Ms. Marvel Marvel Rising, you've got Ms. Marvel Squirrel Girl Marvel Rising, and then I believe the last one is going to be called Marvel Rising Omega. But anyway, they're four issues. It's a mini series. It is Doreen Green and Kamala Khan being nerdy and coming up against it's sort of a Doc X type baddie, but also with a bit of basic Becky thrown in. honestly, you have to read it. It's hilarious, but it's very, very good, and I would highly recommend it. Maybe wait until it's collected in trade and we'll have a much more sensible name. And I, for one, am really looking forward to seeing the Marvel Rising TV show, which I can't watch yet because I live in the UK and it's not here yet. Sad voice. also on my list, I've got Princeless by Jeremy Whitley and friends. I've put and friends because there's quite a few people that have worked on the various different Princeless books. But they're all awesome. Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur from Amy Reeder and Brandon Montclair. Again, they don't do so well in single issues, but they do amazingly well in trades and at book fairs. And it's the same kind of audience that you'd be looking at. It's your kind of your teen, dare I say it, tween audience. And then one for maybe the older readers is Giant Days from John Allison, Lisa Tremaine and Max Sarin, which I know is a super popular Talking Comics favourite. But as somebody who has been to university in the UK, every time I read this book, I'm like, wow, it's like they took me and split my personality into three and made a comic book about it. So I wouldn't suggest your younger reader goes for Giant Days. Probably not appropriate. But, you know, older teens, adults, jump on it. It's great fun. It's really funny. And again, it's people going out into the world and finding their place and seeing that big social experiment that is life. And yeah, it's a good, funny book and it's got nerds in it. So I'm in.
It's got nerds in it. I love
easily pleased. Throw me some comedic nerds and I'm there.
Well, everything with nerds make everything better.
Exactly. Is there anything that I missed off that list that either of you two would recommend? Did you kind of look at anything else with Ms. Marvel in, or are there any books that I should be reading that I've clearly missed?
No, that was a pretty extensive list.
That was quite extensive.
I had one that I thought it's long form fiction though, and it's definitely for a slightly older audience. I just thought it's not comedic though, so I'm not sure it fits exactly with this list, but it's sort of along the lines of kind of finding the hero within, and it's sort of growing up a little bit and figuring out who that is and who you can be. And it's definitely for a slightly older audience, but I've been really enjoying the series. It's called A Court of Thorn and Roses by Sarah J. Maas. And I really enjoy her as a writer.
I keep seeing these books and I keep thinking I need to pick these up, but that is a big time commitment because there's quite a few books in that series.
There are a few, yeah. And you have to definitely read them in order because the first book, I reread things all the time. So for me, like when I get a series, I'll read them through and then I'll start at the beginning again and read them through and then start at the beginning again and read them through. But I... this one, like after you read the first one, you go into the second one, well, stuff that happens really, like consequences make a difference and really impact the next books, so it makes it more difficult to reread them because you know what happens. Ooh, and it changes things a lot, and it's really cool, so I like that. Yeah, it's neat. I think that's my favorite series by this author, and I've read a few things. So I'm enjoying it.
One thing you just reminded me, actually, there's a book called Children of Blood and Bone that I read recently, and I'm going to have to Google it because I can't remember who it's written by. But that was an absolutely brilliant book. Again, about, you know, where is my place in the world, thinking that you are different and trying to work out who you are. Children of Blood and Bone by Tomi Adeyemi. Unfortunately, I got to the end and went, oh, at the last paragraph, and then realised I've got to wait until next year for the sequel.
Oh, I hate that.
It was recommended to me by my friend Katie Sullivan from Twitter, and she said, oh, I was told it was like Harry Potter, but in Africa, but it's way better than that sounds. And I was like,
Okay, that sounds good. I am 100%
worth it. Really, really good. But yeah, the sequel's not going to be out till next year. But again, it's one of those kind of coming of age, teenagers, things change, people change. Where do you fit in the world? So yeah, that's another one that you should check out. Mm. So
One book that did you mention? I know we talked about Kelly Thompson a little bit, but her Hawkeye. Because if I think if you like Miss Marvel, you would also kind of enjoy Kelly Thompson's Hawkeye as well.
Oh, sass dialed up to 10. It's amazing.
Yeah. Solid recommendation. Yeah, that is another really good book.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Now we can close it up.
I'm a little ashamed of myself that I didn't think of that my own self. So
yeah, it just popped. Well, I didn't think about it at first, and then I was like, oh, as we were sitting here talking, and I'm like, oh, you know what? If someone likes to read this, they probably really enjoy Hawkeye as well.
100%.
Good. Yes. So clever. So clever. Love it. Anyway,
I think maybe I should start actually putting these lists up somewhere rather than me just reading it out. Maybe I should actually write them down.
Yeah, maybe we put them in the show notes.
Because maybe people don't actually listen to us with a notepad and pen and take notes while we're talking.
I don't know.
Is that a thing that people do?
I don't know. I take notes. I'm not going to lie. I have a pen and a paper in front of me right now, and I just noted all of those things. But, you know, nerds make everything better. Nerd alert.
maybe I think I might actually call this week's show notes Nerds Make Everything Better. Yeah, maybe. Maybe our regular listeners don't take notes, so maybe I will actually type this out for people. And maybe I'll edit this bit out of the podcast, because I am just waffling twaddle now.
Oh my God, please add waffling twaddle to the end.
Yes, please say waffling twaddle again. I'm going to use that.
I'm actually going to dive down too.
Because I really love some of the words that you say. I love like English, like British slang. I really do. I love it. I use the word
Sarah Dictionary. I know. Say whinging again, please.
Whinging.
Whinging. I love it. Love it so much.
What's wrong with whinging?
I love it so much. It's so British.
It's almost onomatopoeic. Almost. Yes. Yeah.
Love it.
Well, I think that's a wrap for this time. We hope that you've enjoyed spending some time with us, and we would love to have you back next time. Next month, we'll be taking a deep dive into the recent movie adaptation of Madeleine L'Engle's book, A Wrinkle in Time, directed by Ava DuVernay and starring Storm Reid, Oprah Winfrey, Reese Witherspoon and Mindy Kaling. If you have anything you'd like to talk to us about relating to A Wrinkle in Time, our conversation today about Ms. Marvel, or you just want to say hello, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. We are at Valhalla Ladies, or you can email ladiesofvalhalla@gmail.com. You can also see our beautiful logo on all of our social media as designed by our very own Jessica. So, Lady B, where can our lovely listeners find you?
You can find me at ShinyBabyB on all the things.
And Lady J, where can you be found?
At Jarsica on all things.
Personally, I can be found everywhere that media is social under the name Geek Country Lady. Don't forget to check out talkingcomicbooks.com for news, reviews and articles about comics, video games, TV shows and much more. We have podcasts of all varieties, including Talking Comics, Games, Movies, Trousers, Tractors, Valiant, Bendis Assembled and Adventure, the D&D podcast. Thank you once more, and we'll be back in your ears again soon. I'm really sorry if you can hear a cat, but Loki is next to the closed door.
And kitty. Closed doors are so offensive to cats.
That's why he's meowing. They're like crying at the door, like, why is this closed? Open this for me.
You literally have to come in this room. Yeah. What is your problem? I'm going to cut all of this out in editing.
Taken in a... Well, they wanted to join. They say hi. They're very passionate about New York as well. And New Jersey.
Good puppies.
Anyway, I think if it was like... That. Because you're expressing... Excuse you guys. Well, sorry. They are being very active today.
I think they just agree with me.
They did. They agree. They agree. Hey! Sorry.
I actually sat up straighter when you did that. I know. I was like, oh, I've been told off.
They're just not listening. We're not listening. They're still barking. Oh, man. Anyway, I don't even remember what I was saying now. I totally interrupt it. Hold on one second. Can we? Can you cut this? I'm sorry.
Yeah. I can cut this out. Don't worry. Hold on. Post credit scene.
Yeah. Can you get them? Thank you. Daddy's coming now. Oh, now you're in trouble. Daddy's here.
Oh no.
Oh God, I'm sorry. They got a little extra today.
That's okay.